Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. This is Connecting Faith, and we like to connect on a daily basis with guests from a wide perspective and serving the Lord in a variety of areas. And today we're going to focus on the large nation of China and its influence in the world, and particularly as the church grows in China. And Ryan, I was thinking China story that I had was one from Ronald Reagan, which is just, it doesn't really fit with our discussion at all.
This is when you knew President Reagan?
No, I didn't actually know him personally.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But so,
okay.
Yes, so, I mean, I know we both look like we're about the same age, but that's just because of my face treatment. That's why.
Looking great, man. Looking great.
Someone asked, a reporter asked President Reagan, says, "What do you think of Red China?" And his response is, "Well, I generally let Nancy pick out the dishes." But anyway, that has nothing to do with our discussion. Well, I don't know. Anyway, I did want to welcome Joanne Pittman to the broadcast today. Joanne's a senior associate of China Source, has been a veteran teacher and consultant and a writer, and lived in China for over 25 years. She's a Northwestern alum, and we talked with her many times in the past as she comes back to the States, and are happy to connect with her again. I'm sorry about the bad China.
That's okay. I've heard worse.
Anyways, thanks for coming in, Joanne. It's good to see you again.
Nice to see you, too.
We want to talk a little bit about China. It's a place where you have lived and worked for nearly 30 years, and now working with China Source. I mean, you've done lots of writing and just to get some perspective. And I know, I think last time we talked, we were sort of discussing how China is really kind of a nation of paradox, and I guess that's probably still the case, isn't it?
It's still the case, and as we often say about China, it's the same, only more so.
Okay.
And yes, the paradoxes remain, and I like to quote from the book by Rob Gifford, a book called China Road, and he's after traveling across China and meeting with many people, he just says, "If you're not confused, you're not paying attention," and I think that is an adequate description of those of us who watch China and live there.
Obviously, a very large nation, and we've heard wonderful reports about the church, how it's grown over the years, and while we probably don't have real accurate numbers, but let's just start out with that. Give us a little sense about, how do we evaluate where the church is today, and I do want to talk a little bit about persecution in a moment, but maybe just some overview about the church.
Well, I think the church in China, of course, I think the big story is the growth. In 1949, if we just look at the numbers, in 1949, when the People's Republic of China was founded, there were probably about 700,000 Protestant Christians in China. Then they moved through, the government consolidated the churches and restricted the numbers of churches, even though they allowed religion initially. By the mid-1960s, with the advent of the Cultural Revolution, they really were trying to rid Chinese society of all religious activity and included the churches. So everything shut down. In the 1960s and 1970s then was really the period of the most intense persecution, not only of Christians, but of all religious faiths and really of everybody in China. Pretty much everybody suffered, whether they were religious or not. And then in 1980, things began to change. The government looked around and they said, well, on a lot of levels, this isn't working. And they launched what was called the Opening and Reform Policy under Deng Xiaoping, which was basically saying our focus on political campaigns and building Marxism really hasn't worked, and we need to go down a different path. And that's when they started to institute economic reforms that allowed free market economic principles back into the system. And one of the things they did then in 1979, 1980 was to allow religion back into society, whereas it had been driven out. And they said, okay, we'll create a small space for religion. And so churches began to reopen, mosques were reopened, temples were reopened, and so religion sort of was given a little tiny space in society. At that point, the estimate of the number of Christians was 10 million. So you have 30 years where it went from 700,000 to perhaps 10 million during an era of pretty serious persecution. And then from 1980 until now, you have a growth just in terms of numbers of nobody really knows the total number of Christians in China, but it's probably 70 to 100 million. And so you've got 700,000 to perhaps 70 million in 60 years. And much of that being during a time when it was heavily persecuted, and now in a time where persecution is not so much an issue as just sort of restrictions.
We do hear, we talk about persecution not so much an issue, but it does seem to be a hot topic, I guess, for us, don't we? In the West, anyway, we want to know about the church persecution in China. So do the numbers tell the whole story?
I don't think the numbers tell the whole story, because if you just look at the numbers that I talked about, you know, if we say that there are 70 million Christians in China, which is probably a conservative estimate, and you look at the numbers of documented persecution incidents, which I think there was a report that came out a couple of weeks ago about that, you know, saying that persecution had increased. They were really only identifying about 5,000 incidents, what they classify as persecution. So if you just look straight numbers, you're talking about 5,000 out of maybe 70 million. And so I think that the most you can say when you look at the numbers is that persecution hasn't gone away, but it's not the main experience for most Christians in China today. And I think in the West, it's a narrative that we sort of are very much attracted to. And if we just look at that one narrative, I think we're getting a very, very skewed picture of the church in China. Not to say that it doesn't happen, but even in the report, some of the things that they were identifying as quote-unquote persecution, the locals in China would just say, well, this is just life, you know, the harassments and things like that. So I think I'm often asked, you know, oh, is the persecution, are things in China getting better or worse? And I don't think it's
probably say yes, right?
Yeah, so, yeah. It's not really a helpful question because better or worse compared to what? Compared to 30 years ago, certainly better. I don't think anybody would make a case that it's worse than it was 30 years ago. And but I think if we're comparing it to what we want it to be, certainly it's not where most of us and where even most Chinese Christians would like it to be. But what we see, though, over the last 10 years really is the space within which the church and Christians are allowed to operate is continuing to expand, while at the same time there are still serious problems and restrictions and harassments that continue to take place.
And when we talk about the church, I mean, it's not really one, I guess, one entity necessarily, is it? Right? I mean, there's several. There's the official church. There's the underground church, right?
Yeah, it's really even hard to clearly identify what we mean by the church, because what I like to do is talk about the church in China in terms of three different faces, not necessarily three different churches, because there's only one church of Jesus Christ, but there are three different faces of the church in China. One of the faces is the registered church, the official legal government churches that are established all over China. Sometimes we call that the three self church because they're under the supervision of a political entity called the three self patriotic movement. So they call themselves the three self church. And so the three self church in China, I think the government, when the Chinese government puts out its numbers of Christians in China, they count the people in those churches and it's about 23 million. That's their official statistics of Christians in China. And the Three Self Church is functioning and growing and flourishing. One of the big problems they have is they don't have enough pastors. There are seminaries around China that train pastors for the Three Self Churches, but there aren't enough seminaries to handle all of the needs of the church. Things that the Three Self Church can do, they can, you know, they're legal, so they build these big buildings. In fact, in February, the largest church in China was opened, and it's a giant church in the city of Wenzhou that seats 5,000 people, and it's just, I mean, a real mega church. And so those are, that's one of the faces of the church in China, is the registered or the Three Self Church. And what I would say about the Three Self Church is that God is doing amazing things in that church. It's not perfect. There are a lot of churches that have problems. But I think in the West, there's a very simplistic, oh, it's the Three Self, it's, you know, supervised by the government, so it must be bad. And that's I think that's an unfair characterization of that church. There are a lot of Bible-believing, gospel-preaching pastors in the Three Self churches in China. The second face of the church in China would be the rural unregistered or the house church movement. So you have, in addition to all of these official churches, these churches that are registered and have legal status by the government, you have millions and tens of millions of Christians who worship outside of those structures because they don't want to put themselves under government authority. And it, I mean, there's a whole historical background to this, but this is the movement that we typically refer to as the house church movement. That's what they call themselves. And in the countryside during the 60s and 70s, this is where the main growth of the church took place, was this rapid spread of the gospel in the rural areas in China. So you have this explosion of this house church movement. This is the church that often is labeled as the underground church. And I think in today's China, that's not a particularly apt term anymore, because a lot of them in the countryside, there's a little bit more secrecy, but I prefer the term the rural house church. That's the house churches. They're in the countryside, in the villages, among a population of people who have a low education, and they're peasants. And then the last 10 years has saw the development of what I call a third face of the church in China, which is the urban unregistered church, or the urban house church is another common term for it. And this is a movement in the cities in China of Christians who are part of the intellectual and the educated classes of Chinese society, and they live in the cities, they're urban residents. And they have started churches in the city because they also don't want to associate themselves with the government churches for a variety of reasons. But a lot of it is they want to do church. They want some autonomy and independence. And these urban house churches have exploded in the cities in the last 10 years. And they're different from the rural church. And one of the key differences is many of them did not experience the persecution of the 60s and 70s like the rural church did. So they don't have... They're not reflexively anti-government. They're just kind of saying to the government, just leave us alone. And this is a very interesting church because sometimes it's called the open church. They're worshiping very openly, and some of these registered or unregistered urban house churches in Beijing are 1,000 people, and they rent office space, and they have websites, and they, you know, the website has a Google map on, you know, where to find us, and phone numbers of all the pastors. So I think if that's a situation, you can't really call it an underground church anymore. And the government is just sort of, you know, turning a blind eye and tolerating it. So long as the churches don't push the boundaries and cause trouble, they sort of allow them. Beijing supposedly has a couple of thousands of these churches.
And I guess that's one of the issues, I guess, nationwide, right, in terms of, you know, pushing the boundaries. I mean, that's, you know, you talked a little bit about harassment earlier. I mean, it's just there is a fairly strict framework around which everybody lives in the country, right?
Yes, that's true for everybody. One of the things I like to say about the religion in Chinese society is that the government says to the people of China, and particularly religious believers, you can believe whatever you want. We don't really care what you believe, but we will set the boundaries within which you can practice that faith. And in the 60s, there were no boundaries. It was just said you can't. And now we've seen the expansion of the boundaries. The problem in China in this area, as well as every other aspect of life, is that these boundaries are rubber and invisible. They're not clear. And so the only way the church and Christians in China know where they are is to push them. And they get out, okay, we push here, we push here, and we're not getting into trouble. It must be okay. And when they hit that point where the government says, I'll tolerate to this point, but not to that point, that's when they find out where the boundary is.
That sounds like children a little bit. We did that as kids. Anyway, Joanne Pittman is my guest today. We're talking about China. Joanne's a senior associate of China Source and is a veteran teacher, consultant, writer, has lived in China for over 25 years, just getting some perspective on church in China. We do want to talk about how the West, how the church in the West can serve the church in China. We'll get to that and more. By the way, if you may have a question or a comment about what God's doing in China and would like to join the conversation, you're welcome to give us a call. The number is 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. We'll continue in just a minute. Past the hour, and we're talking China today, particularly about the church in China, but we want to expand that a bit as well and understand more about our brothers and sisters in Christ. We've heard the church continues to grow, 70 million, maybe more. I don't really know the real numbers, but God's doing a great work in China, and Joanne Pittman is here to talk to us about it. The veteran teacher and consultant and writer has lived in China for nearly 30 years. So, Northwestern College graduate, and we go way back, so it's just fun to visit with Joanne again. She's now a senior associate of China Source and writes briefs and articles for China Source and does a lot of research and training, also does some teaching and speaking at the colleges and universities, and happy to have her on with us today. I do want to talk a little bit about how the West can serve the church in China, but maybe before that, I'm just kind of curious, give us your sense of I guess the depth of the church. You know, we talk about in the West about, you know, the evangelical church is a mile wide, half inch deep. How would you describe believers in China in terms of maybe their depth and perspective?
Oh, that's a difficult question, because I think there's probably some element of that in China, because the numbers are so big and have happened so fast. I think in the countryside, you might have a little bit more depth, but not as much understanding because of the low education level of the people. But the church in the countryside is the church that has experienced the most suffering over the last 30 years. And so there's this sort of perseverance. And I think that's something that the church in the West can learn from the church in China. The Christians in China have learned how to not only survive but thrive in a very hostile environment, and so God has been very faithful to the church in China in preserving it and keeping Christians strong and through very difficult times through persecution. I think in the cities you have among the urban house churches, because the people are more educated, maybe there's more attention being paid to issues of theology and leadership training and discipleship. So I think that that's a good thing in the urban house churches. I think that one of the issues that people in the urban house church would say that they face is secularization and materialism. How do you stand against that? Because materialism is very, very strong, this, drive to get rich and be successful and powerful is very, very strong in the cities in China. So that is
that's almost kind of a mantra, isn't it?
Or sort yes, of to get rich is glorious. Deng Xiaoping said that 30 years ago. But I've had numerous conversations in China with lots of people, even just taxi drivers. I like to have conversations with taxi drivers, and we'll ask, you know, what do Chinese people believe in? And I will get one of two answers, either nothing or making money. And so so I think that is a real pressure on the church in the cities. And so they're looking to go more, deeper into theology. And then the churches in the cities have not experienced the persecution at the level that the countryside people did 30 years ago. So and then the Three Self Church, I would say, while many Three Self churches you can go and hear the gospel preached very faithfully, there are so many people that it's very hard for the Three Self church to do discipleship and to go very deep. And so I think that I don't want to say it's a shallow faith. I don't think that I'm in a position to make that judgment, but because of the size, because of the numbers and the lack of qualified leaders, it's very hard for people in the Three Self Church to go deep in their knowledge and their faith. It's harder.
It's one of the questions I was wondering about is if, you know, we talk about the church in the Western societies, is it having an influence in culture? You know, are we, how would you say, are the believers in China, are they the ones that are, you know, helping orphans and you know, widows or, you know, those kinds of things? Or?
I think they would like to. It's one of the areas where there's a lot of restrictions. The government, especially if it's an unregistered church, the government doesn't recognize its legality. So it's hard for them to go and say, well, we want to start an orphanage or a church. The government say, well, who are you? We don't recognize that you exist. So that's a hard thing. And the government, the Chinese government doesn't allow associations to form and develop and grow outside of its control. So China doesn't really have a strong culture of NGOs, non-governmental organizations. There are some non-governmental organizations in China, but they're run by the government. Okay. So China has come up. They have no, they have government-run NGOs, okay. And they don't want too many people outside of them doing things. But I would say that the churches in China, both in the both Three Self and the House Church movement, are really, this is one area that they're really talking about. How do we, as the church, influence society? Because they've been sort of relegated. The government said, just stay over there. But now, because China has so many social problems that the government even acknowledges, it is giving the church, Christians, an opportunity to stand up and say, hey, to the government, we're not against you, but we can offer some assistance. We can help meet some of these needs. And so we're seeing a little bit of instances where Christians are getting involved in orphanages or old folks' homes or in the area of business running, you know, Christian businessmen and entrepreneurs and things like that. It's very, very difficult, but I would say this is a major topic of conversation among Christians in China is how do we be salt and light in our communities, whether it's our neighborhoods or our city or our workplace? A major topic of conversation in house churches and in Three Self churches today.
I think in terms of some of the problems that, I mean, we hear about the massive migrations to the cities, and that's happening globally, but I'm sure that affects China as well. They've got, you know, major cities and all have major challenges,
yeah.
Don't they?
Yeah, with the migrant population, China has these, you know, perhaps 150 to 200 million migrant workers who've left the countryside to come into the cities, and that's created a, you know, many of them, if they've been part of the rural house church movement and they've moved into the cities, you're seeing a loss of population in the rural house church movement because their people have gone into the cities. And then they come into the cities and where do they go to church? They don't want to go to the Three Self church and they don't fit into the urban house church. So the rural churches followed them into the cities. So now there's rural house churches in the cities now.
It's a place of paradox, isn't it?
I mean, it is.
That hasn't changed.
No.
Joanne Pittman is my guest today. She is a senior associate of China Source, which is, they provide, is it a monthly newsletter or the Lantern?
Yes, China Source right now, we're moving towards almost an exclusively online publications. And so we have a website, chinasource.org, and you can go there and we post articles regularly throughout the week. And then we also have, in the past, it was called the China Source Journal, and now it's an online publication called the China Source Quarterly, and it will be put online for free once a quarter, obviously. And writing, more in-depth writing on the church in China, looking at what are the issues that the Chinese church are facing, and how can Westerners either help or, you know, or get out of the way in some cases. So I would encourage your listeners to check out the website because it's a good source of information. So what we're trying to do is help Christians in the West make sense of China and to learn about what God is doing and how they might be involved.
And we'll get some answers to that question about how the church in the West can serve the church in China or get out of the way. We'll get Joanne Pittman's perspective on that. Joanne is a senior associate of China Source, a veteran teacher and writer and consultant, lived in China for number of years, and you're listening to Connecting Faith. We'll continue in just a couple minutes.
We're crying out.
It's 32 past the hour, and we're talking today about China, particularly about the church in China, but just getting some perspective on what God's doing in that great nation. And here to help us understand it a bit better, Joanne Pittman, who's a senior associate of China Source, and has been a regular writer for them, and a researcher, and a consultant, and a teacher, and has lived in China for over 25 years, and has taught English as a second language, and does some teaching in colleges, universities, and is with us today just to give us some insight. In fact, we were just talking during the break that China's economy is in many ways robust, and that we all joke about we'll all need to learn Chinese here eventually to talk to our creditors. But you actually have a book, don't you, on teaching Chinese,
learning Chinese? Yes, yeah. I have a book called Survival Chinese Lessons, and it's available on Amazon, and it's 15 short lessons, just really super basic Chinese, and it would be great for somebody who's going to China as a tourist or going to China maybe on a short-term volunteer assignment or going to China to adopt a child. It's just a nice little handy book. It's got a MP3 CD, so you can pop it onto your iPod and listen to my voice.
Okay. So we should do that. So, and it would be helpful. We want to talk about the church in the West serving the church in China, but Dan Wine and I took a trip to Thailand here a couple of weeks ago and saw the work of HCJB over there. It was interesting where the religious influence, of course, is just everywhere in Thailand. I mean, it's just temples and icons all over. Would that be the same in China? Are there religious symbols or influences, or is there none of that?
It's not very visible. You do in China, of course, you see Buddhist temples and Taoist temples, but a lot of that is cultural. Again, during the Cultural Revolution, all of that was closed as well. But a lot of the Buddhist and Taoist temples are, even though they're open and functioning as religious venues, they're also cultural venues, and so a lot of times they're managed by the cultural or the tourism bureau. And so they're places where people go as tourists. They are places where people will particularly go on traditional Chinese holidays like Spring Festival and Chinese New Year and Grave Sweeping Day, where they'll go and burn incense. And I think the attitude towards Buddhism and Taoism is sort of just in case. Even people don't, Buddhism doesn't make a lot of demands on you. So yes, there are temples. Churches, I would say there's still not a lot, although in the last 10 years there has been a little bit of a building boom of official churches. And so you are seeing more and bigger churches in some of the larger cities. But I would say overall the church is still sort of, I don't want to say in the shadows, but it's, for example, the city of Beijing, which has 20 million people, I think has officially 18 or 20 registered churches. That's not very many for a city of 20 million. And, probably I think that number of Catholic churches. So it's still not real visible. The Christians are sort of making forays. You are reading about Christians who are participating on these, reality shows on television. They have their own version of, American Idol. And sometimes Christians will be on and singing Christian songs and doing things like that. And some celebrities in China, movie stars and television stars, are being more open about their Christianity. But I was still very, very small.
Talk a little bit about is there a role for the West to play in serving the church in China? What should that look like?
I think there is, but it probably looks different than most people think. Because the church is fairly large, and we look at 70 million people, I think that demonstrates that evangelism in China is being done primarily by Chinese, because the numbers of foreigners working in China is still quite small relative to the population. And so really, the church in China today is quite evangelistic. I would say the last 5 years, 5 to 10 years, I've noticed that become a much more dominant theme in the preaching, both in the house church and the three self churches, the importance of evangelism. And so I think, evangelism is probably primarily something that the Chinese a church is doing. And so as Westerners, we need to look to ways in which we can serve. And I think a big thing is an attitude, you know, what is the church? And I think sometimes our focusing on the persecution narrative prevents us from seeing maybe other ways, seeing a more mature church than we think. It's sort of, if all we're focusing on is the persecution stories, again, which are there, I think then it's too easy for us to just view the Chinese Christians as primarily victims. And I think that prevents us from looking around and saying, oh, really the church, some of the issues that the church is facing are issues like leadership training. It's really hard for pastors to be trained in China. There are three self-seminaries, but there aren't enough. In the house church, they have to do seminary sort of in a underground situation. So providing pastoral leadership, pastoral training would be one area. Providing Christian resources. I think I talked last time I was here about the growth of Christian publishing in China. So providing resources for Chinese Christians, whether it's through publishing or online media. The internet has really changed the landscape in China because Chinese Christians can now access a lot of information, a lot of resources online. There are seminaries and Bible schools outside of China that translate their courses and put them online for Chinese Christians, and so they can have access to some theological training. So I think, you know, providing resources, and then just I think not to underestimate the value of modeling Chinese or foreign Christians being in China, whether they're in business or teaching or whatever they're doing, to be there. I have a friend who's a Three Self pastor, and you know, she just says, "Show up at church." That is an encouragement. That's a help.
Could a pastor from the Upper Midwest, go with the with an agency or something, or I mean, go with and do some teaching, some training? Would that be appropriate? I mean, could they just on a tourist visa go for a couple of weeks?
It would depend. If a pastor from the United States wanted to do some teaching or training in a Three Self church, it would have to be through an official invitation. And those do happen once in a while. I do know of situations where there are pastors from the U.S. who go over, and they've established a relationship with the leadership of a church, so they can do that. If they're working with within the house church movement, that is a much more sensitive area. Again, it would be done through a relationship. And again, I also know of people who have relationships in the house churches and are able to go and do training and speaking. But because, again, that's outside of the legal frameworks, those are sort of done more quietly.
Mm-hmm. Just finding the right relationships. I mean, we talk a lot of times about adopting people groups or maybe adopting churches. I mean, many churches here in the West have done that. Does that work in China?
I don't think necessarily adopting, but in China, everything is connected to relationships. So it takes time. You know, if you want to be involved in China, it requires going to China, meeting people, getting to know people, building trust with local, either religious officials or local pastors, and also learning what their needs are, what the needs of a church in a particular area or a particular church are, and then being open to being invited. And I think it's hard for Americans. We're just fixers. You have a problem, we can solve it. But I think Americans need to really learn what the issues are in the church, what the issues of the church in China are, and then through relationships be able to say, is there anything that we can do that will help you, that will serve you, that will bless you, as opposed to cause you trouble?
Have you learned how to not be a fixer in your 25 years there?
It's hard.
Okay.
It's very difficult. Yeah, it's one of the cultural clash points that I think most Americans have when they go to China, because we tend to look around and say, well, why is it like this? You know, you can fix this or you can fix that. And we can't. And the Chinese are much more, it's been like this for several thousand years. It works for us. And
well, I guess, I mean, that's part of it, too, isn't it? I mean, they've got, a 5,000-year history.
Yes.
Our 200 years of, upstart, independence probably doesn't really matter so much?
Well, it does matter in the sense that a lot of Chinese look at it. It's like, how did you do that so fast?
Hmm.
How did you go from being nothing to being, you know, the dominant power in the world and so advanced? And so they are looking to learn. They are looking to learn. So I think that the more that the church in the West can interact on a peer basis with the church in China, not looking at it as sort of a poor, you know, downtrodden church, but as a peer, that there are connections between pastors in the West and pastors in China, the more exchange and the more conversations that take place, the more we hear what the Chinese Christians are talking about, the more we can learn and see where our role is.
Well, and I know there's always a great impact from relationships through international students.
Mm-hmm.
I assume whether the students are from China or any place else in the globe, there's value in just establishing relationships.
Yes, there's lots and lots of Chinese students coming to the United States. I think that I've heard this in the past. I don't know if it's true today, but I know that in the past that the University of Minnesota had the highest number of mainland Chinese students of any university in the country. So, and there are a lot of organizations and ministries that are working specifically with Chinese university students, and many are coming to know the Lord, and many are going back. 20 years ago, very few went back. Now a lot of them are going back, and so there are sort of networks of returnees Christians in China, and they're starting their own little churches and figuring out their place in the church in China as well.
Getting some perspective on the church in China and learning a bit more about this great nation and how we can more effectively pray and serve the church in China. And we'll continue our discussion in just a moment. Joanne Pittman is the Senior Associate of China Source, a veteran teacher, consultant, and writer. Lived in China for over 25 years as a Northwestern grad, and we're always happy to have her back in the area. And we're just taking some time to get some perspective on the church in China. We want to talk a little bit about, mention that, you know, they're looking to learn a little bit about what the U.S. has done, maybe in terms of economic development. We want to get some perspective, maybe political and economic, and talk a bit about that as well. And talk about ways that we can pray, and we'll get to that in just a minute here on Connecting Faith. Taking some time to see more clearly about the world that our brothers and sisters in Christ experience in China. Helping us do that, Joanne Pittman, who's a veteran teacher, consultant, writer, has lived in China for nearly 3 decades and serves now as a Senior Associate of China Source. You can find out more about their great writings and resources online at chinasource.com. Chinasource.org. There's another website we're going to talk about in a moment, but Joanne, maybe just say a word about, you know, there's China's going through political changes, you know, economics. So give us maybe kind of just a big picture of where you see things going there and tensions that they're experiencing.
Hmm.
In 2 minutes.
Oh, in two minutes,
sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
One treads very lightly in predicting it, China.
Yes. Well, yeah.
I'm not sure I would say they're going through political changes. They're going through leadership change right now in the Communist Party. And we have China has a new leader, new head of the Chinese Communist Party, and the president, and a new prime minister. And these are the two men who basically run the country. They oversee this body of seven that makes all the decisions. And so it's a little bit of uncertainty right now. I think people are hopeful. I think there is a segment in the society, particularly among the intellectual class, that would like to see the beginnings of some political reforms in the society, because what you have in China today is you have an authoritarian, totalitarian political system that's managing a freewheeling capitalist economy. And that's very confusing. It's very difficult. And as economic development has progressed and people's standard of living has risen and people have more personal freedoms in their everyday life, and a middle class has developed, they're now beginning, some in the middle class are saying, you know, we would like some more, at least more transparency, but maybe even some participation in the political process. So I think that's the question. Will the Chinese Communist Party be able to institute any sort of reforms that will make it more responsive or accountable to the people. Economically, they're still a powerhouse, but there's some pretty serious fault lines underneath that could, that could disrupt it. So I think that praying for China, a good thing to pray for China is stability, because if there's instability in China, that will hurt everybody. But you've got the second largest economy in the world and so many people. So I wouldn't want to be the leader of China.
Yeah, that's a big job.
They need our prayer.
Yes, no doubt. We were talking about, international students and relationships, many going back, but there are a number of Chinese that are going out as missionaries, right? That's sort of the next stage of the church growth.
Yeah, this is a very exciting development in the church in China, really, over the last 10 years. Not in large numbers. I think 10 years ago, there were a lot of reports that there were hundreds of thousands of Chinese getting ready to go overseas, and there weren't that numbers. But there are Chinese Christians today leaving China and going abroad to do cross-cultural missions. To take the gospel. And I think, put that in the context of, 30 years ago, the church was reopened and allowed back into society, and they were just sort of in this survival mode. And in 30 years to go from we've survived the great persecution era, and now to a point at which there are missionaries that are being sent. And I think this is one area where the church in the West probably can help, because we have a long history of missions. And so I think that helping the church in China think through how they're going to do cross-cultural missions is exciting. I grew up in Pakistan, and there are Chinese missionaries today in Pakistan. And so that's, when I was there as a kid, it was Red China. They someday there'll be Chinese missionaries here. It would have been crazy. But this is just a one snippet of what God is doing. The church in China,
and maybe bringing influence that the church in the West maybe has lost their place or couldn't have.
Because in many places they're going to areas where Westerners and particularly Americans would not be welcomed.
You were you're just saying that we want to mention a website, the Chinese Church Voices, and then you got time for a little story here.
Okay. Yes, it's a website that's managed by a China source as well, and it's called ChineseChurchVoices.com. And over the last few years through research, we've discovered that with the proliferation of the internet in China, there is a growing, the Chinese Christians have a presence on the internet in China, and so there's this explosion of Christian websites and church websites and personal blogs and microblogs and all of this kind of thing. And so we've been sort of watching this development over the last couple of years, and in July we decided to launch this website where we are taking articles that are written by Chinese Christians, posted on websites within China, and we're translating them into English, so that this gives those of us outside of China a chance to listen in on the conversation that Chinese Christians are having. And we believe that this will help us have a better understanding of what the church in China is facing, what the issues that they're dealing with. And so we're trying to put up two new posts every week. It's just articles taken straight from Christian websites within mainland China. So we just like to encourage your listeners to take a look at that, to listen in on the conversation.
That's a great idea. ChineseChurchVoices.com. Check that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great.
And you mentioned a story about church bells.
Yes, I would like to in the few minutes we have remaining, just tell a little story that I think illustrates the story of the church in China. In last March, I traveled across China with Noelle Piper, and we were doing some research for a book that she's writing on a missionary from Bethlehem Baptist Church who went to China in the 1920s, and she was there for 25 years. And we were visiting a church in southwest China and visiting with the pastor. It was a three-self church. And telling him what we knew about the history of his church, and he was telling us. And then he told us, he said, I have we have this bell in our steeple and it has English writing on it, and we can't read it. Would you help us translate it? And we said, sure. So we climbed up into the steeple, and we found this giant bell hanging in the steeple, and the inscription said, Buckeye Bell Foundry, Cincinnati, Ohio, 1886. presented to the First Baptist Church of Coffeyville, Kansas by W.S. Upham. Praise ye the Lord. And we were amazed. And he had told us that the government had called him up one day and said, we have your bell. And he didn't know anything about it. And in the 1950s, there was a political campaign in China when they went into people's homes and said, give us all your metal and burn it, and we're going to make bombs to retake Taiwan or something. And so my immediate thought was, how did this church survive the Great Leap Forward? So I asked the pastor, I said, how did this bell survive the Great Leap Forward and Cultural Revolution? And he turned and he said, oh, they tried to burn it, but they couldn't. It was too strong. And I said, oh, like the church in China. And he said, yeah, like the church in China. And so for me, a church bell now has become a symbol of God's faithfulness to the church in China. And through subsequent research, I've discovered dozens of these old church bells around China. So that to me is just a beautiful picture of it's been hard to be a Christian in China. The church has had a difficult time in China, but God has not forgotten it. And every time a church bell chimes, it's that reminder that God is faithful to his church in China.
Hopefully, as we listen to the church bells here, we'll be reminded of that as well.
Yes.
That there are believers in China that are persevering, because I think that you said that was one of the things that they've learned how to persevere. Right?
They have.
They put up with the stuff of life and in the much bigger levels than what we deal with. So we pray for the leadership in China. For stability, pray for the strength of the church. Give us maybe just another thought or two, just some things that we pray for. When you pray for China, what do you pray for?
I think when we pray for China, you know, the things that you mentioned, but also that this space that they have will continue to expand, that the Chinese Christians will know what it means to be salt and light in their community in China. It might look different than it does here, but this is a big theme in China, so that God will show them where, in what specific ways they can be salt and light in China. And just to continue to pray that they would continue to persevere under difficult circumstances.
That the harassment is not necessarily just because of religion, but the politics and, I mean, any number of things, right?
Right. Anybody in China can be harassed. But a lot of the incidents that we hear about that we might label persecution, the Chinese would just say, well, it's just sort of normal harassment. So, but it is frustrating and it is difficult. But the Chinese Christians are by and large cheerful, and they say, this is the environment that God has planted our church, and, you know, we're going to be salt and light here.
Well, it is. It has been planted well. We think about those pioneer missionaries decades ago that really planted some seeds with roots going down deep.
Mm-hmm.
Excited about that. Joanne, thanks so much for the update. Let me give you those couple of websites again. We mentioned chinasource.org. That's a place where you can get involved in some email updates and quarterly reports on what's going on in China. And then to have an opportunity to be part of the conversation of the church in China, you can check out this website, ChineseChurchVoices.com, ChineseChurchVoices.com, or Chinasource.org. Joanne Pittman is a senior associate of China Source, and she's a veteran teacher, consultant, a writer. She lived in China for over 25 years and back in the States here and taking a little time to visit with us today. It's great to visit with you again.
Thank you. And I have a personal website, too, JoannePittman.com.
That's right, yes, because we want to find out about the learning Chinese.
Yeah, Survival Chinese Lessons, and you can purchase it on Amazon.
Survival Chinese Lessons. So, and is there anything about speaking to our bankers? Or no?
Okay, no.
All right. Just seemed like that might be appropriate, yeah. But anyway, all right. John Pittman joining us today here on Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. I want to encourage you to be with us tomorrow. We're going to spend some time talking about developing prayer as a regular habit and part of our life. And our guest is Paul Miller. It'll be a great time to learn a little bit more about making prayer an active and meaningful part of our life. So I hope that you will tune in tomorrow here on Connecting Faith for that. And as always, we do post our interviews online. So you go to our website at myfaithradio.com, and you can click on the Connecting Faith show page and have an opportunity to listen to the podcast or share it with a friend. I hope that you will. And by the way, thank you for your support of the ministry. Coming up in about a month, our spring fundraiser, and it's an opportunity to talk about the important partnership role that you play in keeping this ministry going. So if you appreciate the programming, just let us know. You can do that with a gift online anytime. It's myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.